All right, folks, you're tuned to High Plains Public Radio. Thank you for being here with me. It's Jenny Anzarello, and you're listening to High Plains Morning. I always love speaking with authors, and I especially love speaking with authors with a connection to the High Plains. I got a hot tip from our buddy Kathleen Holt at the Radio Readers Book Club about a new novel that just came out, and we've got Robert Rabine on the line right now. He is the author of The Last Rancher. You might have heard of it. You might have been aware. I believe there was a BookBite about this puppy, and it just came out. If you're in the Dodge City area, you probably are aware of this. At Dodge City Days, from the 1st to the 4th, Dr. Rabine, I believe, has been out there talking about this book and making sure people know about it. It's set in Dodge. It's such a High Plains story, and I'm so happy to have you on the line finally. Robert Rabine, thank you for joining us on High Plains Morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
All right. Well, first and foremost, for those who don't know about you, who have maybe heard, oh yeah, The Last Rancher. I mean, whenever there's a book that comes out based on the High Plains or is set on the High Plains, I feel like most of the people on the High Plains have something about it on their radar. They know some person that's aware of it, that's excited about it, that's read it, that's passing it around. Tell us a little bit about this book itself. Like, it just came out in June and you're kind of doing a little tour right now.
Yeah, that's right. The book was published on June 7th, and I've already had events in various places in Kansas, the Saddle and Sirloin Club in Kansas City, had another event in Kansas City, Salina, Hayes, Russell, and Wichita. And then I've been in Dodge City all of this week for two events. One was a really good event that was at the Boot Hill Distillery, and then I'm also speaking at the Dodge City Public Library. So trying to get the word out about this book, it's a novel, a work of fiction. I would say the category that it would fall in would be contemporary Western. So it's a Western story. It's a story about a family of ranchers who have a ranch, very much like the ranch that I'm sitting in my living room of now, but it's a cattle ranch in Western Kansas. This family was touched by tragedy in the past. They've kind of never healed. And then an event happens where the patriarch goes down with a really bad injury. He's in a truck accident, and the remnants of the family must come together to try to save the ranch and also confront sort of their demons of the past. So it's a family saga told multiple points of view. We get the story from both the matriarch and the three living surviving children. So that's a quick rundown for you of it. It's getting a lot of good press and reviews on Amazon. People are saying that it's a page turner, that they can't put it down. And so I've been very happy to be getting this feedback on the book.
Well, it's extremely cool that, you know, you're writing about something that is kind of, you know, adjacent to your own life. Your previous novels, Headlights on the Prairie and Dragging Wyatt Earp, am I correct? Those were both memoirs?
Yeah, those were both memoir essays, and they were collections of essays about growing up in Southwest Kansas. Anybody who's from Kansas would love this book, but also anyone who's grown up in a small town or a rural area would probably identify with the stories that are in those two books. The Last Rancher is a little bit different because in this book, I am venturing into telling a long-form fictional story rather than family stories, memoirs that are a little bit shorter, but come together to form a book.
So you mentioned that it's very much centered on this family, but it's all kind of through the lens of the land. And, you know, when there's a loss, when there's a tragedy, the land seems to be the thing that is, you know, everyone's connected to. How do we save this? We play so much different kind of music on this program, songs about ranches and the, you know, having trouble getting the kids to want to work the land. We hear about this when we talk to people that, you know, work at Ogallala Commons and, you know, the fact that on the High Plains, a lot of the young people aren't very interested in that work. So it's almost a story of interest when someone is interested in, hey, how do we modernize this? How do we survive this dry land farming? There's so many stories like that that are swirling around that have been covered on Kansas News Service, Texas Newsroom. So this is definitely a topic that I think that every one of our High Plains Public Radio listeners would be intrigued by. Given that you yourself did grow up on a ranch that it sounds like you still have in your family, what was it like going through this narrative and kind of unpacking this, you know, how things were going to land for this fictional family, knowing, I mean, did you have to kind of have a scenario like, what if this happened to me, what would I do? Or did you have like adjacent things where, wow, there's so many people I know that had this thing happen to them and they had to kind of pivot. And sometimes the land goes.
Yeah, no, I've seen it happen a lot. In my case, I based the characters on people I knew really well. And there were each character is not based on one person, although if you're from Dodge City, you might recognize some of the people who turn up as characters in this novel. But they're based on real people, usually two or three different people. And then I put them in a completely fictional situation. And in this case, there is the rancher patriarch has always had his oldest son is kind of his favorite and the one he feels most protective of because the boy has some issues and needs help. And the rancher really wants to have the ranch become the oldest son's ranch. And the oldest son dies at 18 and in tragic circumstances. And the rancher sort of folds into himself and doesn't really handle this very well. And, you know, the remaining children, they're too young to be rebellious and saying, I don't want a ranch, but he basically doesn't give them the opportunity to. He says, he kind of shoos them away and says he'll take care of all of this himself. So he has to sort of pay a price for that when he becomes incapacitated. But the story really is about the family coming back together. And the realist in me has made sure that it's set absolutely in contemporary Dodge City. You will recognize the street names, the bars, the implement dealerships, the names of the roads. And that's kind of an added bonus to have something be that vivid. If you know it, then you really feel like you recognize it. But if you don't, you feel like you've been invited into a world other than your own.
And as someone who, you know, lives and works on the High Plains, I'm always really thrilled to find people like yourself that will give a voice to those towns, because a lot of people that aren't from here, don't know much about here, have a lot of real big misconceptions about what it is like to live and work on the High Plains. And they just think flyover country. There's a lot of, you know, oh, this is just going to be farm. There's nothing there. And it's not like that at all. And it's hard to describe it to people who just kind of never in a million years, unless they had to drive from point A to point B, are going to be understanding what this place is and what it means to the people who live here.
That's right. And also, you know, the another really big theme aside from survival, you know, saving the ranch and family trauma and getting over it and coming together, there's a real strain of thought and depiction of work in this book. So we see Annie, one of the characters, is working on her PhD in English. The phone rings. Her brother Michael has called and said, you've got to get back here. We need you. It's summer. And she comes back, this woman who is working on her PhD in English, and she has to run the wheat harvest. Meanwhile, Michael is a lawyer in Kansas City, and he has to come back and deal with the finances that are going on. And then the youngest brother, Jimmy, who's kind of up to no good, serves a really important part in the plot. But the whole idea of work, like, what does it mean to ranch? What does it mean to be a farmer? What does it mean to have a beef packing plant in your town? And what is the meaning of all of this work, and how does it impact our lives? And I think people who live in Southwest Kansas will be really interested to see their lives and the work that is around them and their communities depicted in a moving and really kind of quick paced story.
And I love that one of the characters is an academic, one of the characters is a lawyer, one of them is just kind of a rambler. The differences in the, you know, types of labor that these people do or don't do, and yet here they are coming together for this one purpose. I can assume that the people who have left, the people who have gone off to the city, people who have pursued something that is not agriculture and distanced themselves from that, might have, you know, a very, very different understanding of what this work is that they have to do. It might feel obligatory and kind of like a, you know, this is a drawback. This is a distraction from the work that I want to do. And you know, setting this in contemporary times versus thinking about older novels, older Westerns, where it was just a given. You're not asked. You're taking over the ranch. So the differences between the offspring of the people who run the ranch and own the land, those expectations, we're seeing those shift so much.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I've noticed in the three books that I've published that are set in Western Kansas is that, you know, the people who live in Western Kansas are obviously one of my part of my audience, and they love the fact that their land is being depicted and their communities are being depicted, and there's a story that's set where they live and gives validity and importance to it. But I'll tell you, the people who move away, they love these books too, because there is a part of them that feels incredible amount of nostalgia and an incredible amount of loss from having left. And in my book, one of the characters, Michael, the lawyer, he's married to another lawyer. They live in Overland Park, Leawood area, in a, you know, huge house. And he has two small boys, you know, they're ages 8 and 10. And part of him is worried that they're not being raised the way he was being raised. And he has all these fights with his wife. She's like, what are you saying? That they should like go to a rural school? They go to the best school in the state. But he longs for the upbringing that he had. And he worries about his children not having it. So that's the other side of it, are people who have left, but they still want to maintain, they still maintain an attachment, not only to the times that they grew up in, but the High Plains as a concept even today. And they compare it continually to their, you know, suburban lives. And in a sense, there's a little bit of loss there, because as you know from living here, there are things that happen and things you can see and things you can do in Western Kansas that you're simply not going to see in the suburbs, like, you know, flying an airplane at 14, driving a wheat truck, you know, before you have a driver's license, driving a completely loaded wheat truck. And then also the demands of work of a family saying, you know, there's a lot on the line in agriculture, and it's a team effort for sure to pull it off. So I think all of these things are themes that will our audience here in Southwest Kansas will identify with.
You know, and it's also kind of, you know, fascinating to think, you know, thinking back on a childhood, I had all this freedom. I was trusted. I mean, I've seen kids, I swear, I've seen an 8-year-old driving a Ford F-350 before on a back road. You know, these kids know how to do some things by the time they're 10. Whereas you think, okay, going to a larger metropolitan area, more opportunities, more, you know, access to healthcare, more access to higher level education. There is something that is kind of interestingly lost when we hear all these stories about, you know, rural hospitals closing. If you're living in an area like this, you're going to be driving how far, you know, in order to get to a hospital, possibly no chance if there isn't an emergency because of the distance that you're going to have to go. So it's kind of through a different lens now when you think about, like, oh, back in my day, and I grew up in this wonderful childhood, whereas it wasn't like that 40 years ago. You know, we're seeing these things happening in the last 15, 20 years that have really exponentially changed what that life is like as well. Have you kind of, you know, has that been explored at all in the book?
Yeah, there's some nostalgia in the book, and there's a question there. You know, when it comes to land, when it comes to farming and ranching, it's always complicated. The succession plan is always complicated. What if you have five kids and they all want to do it? Do you divide a farm or ranch up five ways? That doesn't provide a living for someone. And then what do you do if you've encouraged all your children to go off and to go to K-State and KU and to get master's degrees and law degrees, and they drift away and they're gone? Then what do you do? You know, how do you manage that? And I think a lot of these questions come up all the time. It's always a fraught decision. And there's a court case, in fact, in this book, in which, you know, who owns what land becomes really important. But, you know, the other thing I think I really depict in this novel that's really important is how unique and special some of these places are. For example, the ranch in the novel, the Bar W, it's based on my family's ranch, the Lazy R. But if you come to, it's in a valley, completely surrounded by rolling green hills. And when you're riding a horse through 5,000 acres of nothing but grass, and you've got the hills, the creeks, the cattle moving through, the wildlife, For my life, where I live in Indiana now, I long to come out here and experience this, even though it's tough, it's harsh. Winter can be harsh. The wind can blow high, hard. You got to be tough. But within that toughness, there is a real beauty out here. And I hope I've succeeded in celebrating that in this book.
Well, to know true joy, you must know true suffering. I learned that when I lived in Chicago, and you see the first person wearing their sandals when it's 45 degrees.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, we are. I see in here, there was a mention of workaholic tendencies. That's something that obviously is something that is really just since the beginning. If you have land, if you have animals, you don't get to take a day off. I mean, you have to constantly be working. And I think that there's a lot of the trope of like the younger kids watching their parents work themselves, to death, to try to keep land going despite all these hard times. I think that's really fascinating because I was recently driving to our new studio and I saw this huge billboard right off of the Western Street exit in Amarillo, and it was for AgriStress. We've heard a lot about this. It's called the AgriSafe Network, and it's a crisis support for agricultural communities because we've been seeing so much mental health complication and people with suicidal ideation that work in this industry. And so it's hard to like not look directly at that when you're dealing with these people who work in a place where, yeah, it's always been harsh. Our weather's always been gnarly. This is a different kind of gnarly. This is a different reality. And sometimes you're staring in the face of what can feel really hopeless, in addition to the fact that you might have difficulty finding your kids that want to even take this on. So I can imagine all of this trauma that's happened to this family, them trying to come together, working through this. I mean, it's something that's in the news so much right now.
Yes. And you also have the story of a marriage where two people in the 1970s have such a passionate connection and marry really fast. And the wife grew up in Wichita and the husband grew up on this ranch. And part of the novel is her coming to terms with loneliness, with the work, with what her life is like now, living on this far-flung ranch, driving into town 15 miles 2 or 3 times a day, and living with a man who is under such pressure to not only pay the bills but to pay the loans on the land and on the equipment and even on the cattle, that it does take a toll on them. And so that story is definitely part of it as well, just the high stakes that you see in people who work in this area. And I'll say this, the book also has some humor in it. It's at times it's gallows humor, but that's my style of writing is to I think you'll get some chuckles and maybe some laughs too out of some of these situations, because what I learned growing up and watching my father and living with my father is that sometimes the only thing you can do when things are going wrong on a farm or a ranch is turn it into a joke, even if it's a dark joke. And so there's some of that in this book too.
Well, I love that you're doing a little bit of a tour. Obviously, Dodge City Days. Right now, we're speaking on a Friday afternoon. I'm going to be airing this interview on a Monday. We'll have just been at Dodge City, spreading the word about the book to the people who would be absolutely most invested in it. It looks like you're heading to Lawrence, Kansas, on the 6th of August, 7 p.m. at the Raven Bookstore, which I believe was voted best bookstore in the state of Kansas. It's gotten a really incredible independent bookstore award, so that's a good one. And then off to Indianapolis, Bloomington, and then you're coming back for Topeka, Kansas, on the 28th of September. What's it been like so far? Because you've already been on this tour for a little while. What's been what are the conversations you've been having with people?
Well, it's been great. I like nothing better than to meet readers, and I'm also passionate about giving a reading, kind of performing the characters. I actually did the voices for the audiobook, so the book is available in Kindle, audiobook, paperback. I do have some hardbacks that I sell at the events that I go to, but it's first of all, it's fun to introduce people to the story by reading. I only read for like 15 or 20 minutes, but I'll dive into different parts of the book and try to give people a real feel for it. But lately, as the book has been out for several weeks now, or more than a month, I'm hearing from the people who I go to the readings, and I'm hearing from people who finished it, and it's just so wonderful to hear the things that they say, including that the book was a page turner, that their book club has decided that they're going to talk about it, and then also their identification with the characters. I'll never forget when I was in Russell, Kansas, at that nice bookstore that they have there, I had two readers come up to me, both women. They had both finished the book, and there is a kind of a romance in the book that involves the main daughter character, Annie. And they had some bones to pick with me about how the whole thing turned out. So, I mean, that's fun. That's fun too. The other thing that I've been hearing a lot is that, which really surprised me because I haven't been thinking about it at all, is people saying that there needs to be a sequel. That when they finished the book, they were like, I'm not done following these characters. I want to follow these characters even more. And what happens to Jimmy? And what happens to Annie? And what about Michael and Vanessa's marriage? What happens there? And what about Leroy and Caroline? And so that's one thing that's been thrilling and exciting to me, and also a little daunting to think that I've met a lot of people who love the book, but they're not done with it. They want me to get back to work and spend another 5 years writing a sequel. And you know what? Maybe I will.
Well, I think that you can blame streaming binge-worthy television on that. Everybody wants more, more, more.
That's it. You know, it's like I've already, they say I have so much invested in these characters that I want to know what happens next.
Yeah, you'll check me in 2029.
Yeah, maybe this one will be easier to write. It did take me 5 years to write this book, and obviously I'm a professor and I teach and I don't write full time, but part of it was figuring out who these characters are, what they want, what their problems are, and so maybe I could write something a little. Maybe a sequel wouldn't be quite as hard, but as a writer, you just go in expecting it to be hard, and you expect to enjoy the how hard it is, and that's how I've always been.
What about this story came out easy, and what did you find, maybe unexpectedly, or you were ready for it, was more of a challenge to just get on the page?
Well, so I based it on people I knew and things that I knew really well. But there were some things that are in the book that are based on other people's experiences, and I had to make sure that I got feedback from the right people. So, for example, I'm not a lawyer. One of the final scenes in the book is a land dispute that goes to court, and so there's an actual courtroom scene in there. So I wasn't going to let that be published without having multiple lawyers read it. And I did. I got a lot of feedback from several of my lawyer friends, c a couple of my brothers who are lawyers, and then also I know some writers who are lawyers as well. And so it felt good when I was up in Council Grove, and Jennifer Kassebaum, the owner of that bookstore, she's a lawyer, and one of the first things out of her mouth was that courtroom scene was great. So that felt good. So there were some things like that that I had to research, I had to figure out, and then also just setting it realistically in Dodge City. I had to come back to Dodge City and spend 2 or 3 days just driving around with a notebook in my car and finding the place in the book where I was writing about a particular place and just making sure that I was going to get it right. But I enjoyed that so much. It was fun. I think the thing about writing that most non-writers don't understand is that you don't just write it once and it's done. You have to tear it apart and redo it and redo it and redo it and redo it. And you're right that some of it came so fast and so easy. And then some of it was really, really hard. But one thing that was enjoyable was that I wrote the ending and the beginning just in the last few weeks that I was working on it. And both of those came so fast, I didn't even feel like I had to revise them. So I had some hard times, but also some really good times writing this book.
Is that normally how things go for you, even with like short stories and stuff? Do you normally get the guts and then figure out how you want to intro and end it?
Yeah, you know, it's one thing about writing is that you have to you have to kind of, you can't really write the beginning until you know what the ending is, and you can't really know how to manage the middle if you don't know what the ending is. And that can be frustrating, but I think as you get older as a writer, you get more books under your belt, you just kind of surrender to the process and you say, okay, so I got to do this extra work. Let's get to it. It was so much fun writing this book. I mean, I can't even tell you that. It's been a dream of mine to publish a novel. This is not my first novel. I've written another novel that didn't come out as well, and I learned a lot doing it, but I've never published. And so to have this one come out and to get the reception that it's been getting has just been fantastic.
Well, I see there's a quote on an interview with you on your website that just says that, Dodge City is still your favorite place in the world and the place you know the best. So it's really exciting that you spent 5 years with this novel getting it out, and now other people are getting to, read it and, reflect back what they're receiving from it. And I think this is just such a wonderful way to let people who don't know about us out here on the High Plains to really get deep with some of the people that live here. Because I think when I talk to people who aren't from here and stop by, I think one of the very resounding responses is, "I was so surprised." People that live out here are just really interesting, curious people. It's the way that High Plains Public Radio has stayed going for as long as it has, because people are pretty fascinating and empathetic and kind to one another, and they go through terrible struggles and yet they stay positive despite all of it. And I think being able to send a story about this place through the work struggles, through trauma, through family. This is just going to be compelling to every one of our listeners. I can feel everybody out there wondering how they can get a copy of this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ways to get a copy of it. I mean, it's available on Amazon and being paperback, Kindle, or audiobook. It's also available on audiobook everywhere you can buy an audiobook. So if you get your audiobooks from Spotify, it's on there. If you buy them through Walmart, it's on there. So, and then if you're anywhere near one of my events, I'd really encourage you to come and I'd love to talk to you about the book, read from the book, sign a book. It's available from Meadow Lark Press. So the website for that is Meadowlark Bookstore, all run together, .com. And that would not only help you to support writing about Western Kansas, but also support the press in Kansas, Meadow Lark Press, that is doing the most to bring the lives and the stories of the High Plains to life today.
Absolutely. And I know that Meadow Lark has been involved with Radio Readers Book Club before as well, which is just the way that we amplify the voices of people who are, literary aficionados, people who love books and love talking about books and ideas with other people across the High Plains. Despite our, small rural, populations that we have, there's a lot of really fantastic book nerds out here.
Yeah, I'm glad, and it's wonderful to meet them, and I hope they like the book.
Absolutely. So August 6th, if you're in the Lawrence, Kansas area, I know we have some Lawrence, Kansas listeners, and then 7th of September in Indianapolis, Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana on September 11th, and then the 28th of September, that's a Saturday, in Topeka, Kansas. And if folks wanted to get in touch with you, how can they reach you?
Well, I mean, a good place to go is to my website, which is simply www.robertrabine, all one word, .com. And they'll be able to find all of the information that they need, including events that are coming up, how to contact me, and they'll be able to also watch a video trailer of the book, and then there'll be links there to Meadow Lark as well. So that would be a good way to contact me.
All right. Well, if you're just tuning in, we've been speaking with Robert Rabine. That's spelled REB as in boy, EIN. And he's the author of the brand new book, The Last Rancher. I think with a title like that, you set yourself up for people being like, "So who is it? Who's the last rancher?" All right. Well, Robert, it has been so wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so much for this book, for really, exalting the presence of a pretty special place to those of us who live and work on the High Plains. Dodge City, you've got it, man. You are front and center here. So great to hear that you had a presence at the Boot Hill Distillery as well as Dodge City Days. I hope everyone across that town is leaving left the weekend without having any doubts on what their next book has to be.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me. And I'll be interested in hearing what you think after you read it.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Robert. We'll go ahead and play some songs about ranches now.
Sounds great.